Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Horror Bites on Safe Room, the show where we highlight short indie horror games and the people who make them. I'm playing games within games, and he's rolling in the deep. I'm Neil Bolt, and he is Jay Krieger. How does it go, Jay?
It's going well, man. I got my wetsuit and lots of opinions about both of these games we're going to chat about this week for Horror Bites, so looking forward to it.
Indeed. This week, we explore a wreck on the ocean floor. Get a bit multi-layered on this whole playing horror games thing. These games can be found on itch.io. and Steam this week, and if you play them and enjoy them, please help the developers out by supporting their present and future works in any way you can. As ever, links for both games will be included in the show notes. So first, we went sailing and spelunking last week, and now we are combining water and tight spaces with your pick, Jay.
Yeah, my pick for the week was Neptune's Children, which was a submission for the 2024 Dungeon Crawler Jam from developer Enigmatic, in which the player plays a deep-sea diver hunting for a strange necklace amongst the wreckage of a ship which sunk a month ago after the captain went rogue and sailed the ship into the heart of the Pacific. So this game merges two of my loves, that being aquatic horror and also dungeon crawlers from back in the day, like thinking about the 90s era, and then taking those two concepts and blending it with some survival horror elements that made for a really unique, just general kind of game. You know, that's the thing, is that I've never quite seen this many mishmashes of either subgenres or influences come together in a way that, again, was made for something that kind of just feels like it was curtailed to my likings and interests. So in typical fashion, the way in which the player navigates this, you know, it's a shipwreck in the ocean floor, but for simplicity's sake, I'll refer to it as like a dungeon. It has that very traditional 90s grid-based movement pattern. You want to walk forwards, that's great. If you want to move to the left or the right, you have to first shift your perspective and then you can proceed in that direction. But it feels slightly modernized in the sense that you can interact with objects in the environment instead of the traditional maybe walking up to it and bumping into it and then you interact with it, or, you know, having to click a button. You can just like click on it and then you get this little animation of different chests opening, or in some instances, you can interact with the audio logs that you find from the corpses of people that had perished in the hunt for similar objects that you are, or, you know, other crew members and whatnot. So the player's equipped with some pretty basic weapons: melee knife, spear gun, health kits, but also what is probably the most unique part of their inventory is a hydrophone, which allows you to interact with the corpses of those sailors that you find, that then basically over this distorted voice, and then you get a wall of text, gives you a sense of like their final moments before they perished and whatnot, and their failed hunt for this magic necklace that has a bit of lore to it, which is cool to kind of uncover. But I thought ultimately, like, the audio logs, or the text logs rather, did a great job of kind of like providing an extra layer, I suppose, of substance to this experience. Because a lot of the time when I think about dungeon crawlers, it's more about, you know, the challenge of the survival aspect. How can I, you know, upgrade my abilities to the degree that I don't have to worry really about combat, or, you know, just further honing my skills or making sure I have an adequate amount of like health or mana to get through an encounter. And here I found it was more about the, you know, narrative and whatnot, and kind of soaking up that atmosphere, which gives a lot of sort of like stopping power, I suppose, to the various creepy denizens of the sea that you'll encounter, which run the, you know, the merman variety or the undead variety. And then I suppose in addition to that, like, you have a radar which allows you to get a general feel for like the layout of the ship's wreckage that you're exploring, and also the ocean floor, which is great because enemies hit a lot harder than you might be expecting, which I suppose actually, if you're a fan of dungeon crawlers from the 90s, that should be expected. But, you know, it's a nice additional layer to the survival horror mechanics. You know, you have limited health kits, you have a limited pool of ammunition for your weapon. At the same time, though, utilizing that radar and the map that comes with that lets you sort of monitor, familiarize yourself with enemy patterns, also give you a heads up of where they might be staging an ambush, which maybe is a little bit of cheating, but it's fine. It's the type of thing, though, that when you look at all of these components and put them together, it just, it becomes a really impressive little piece of aquatic horror that, you know, utilizes that game jam sort of parameters in a really compelling way and is just really solid all around. There's the typical sort of like hunting for keys and whatnot to progress to the next area and whatnot. So it's not necessarily like rewriting any of those subgenres, but I was really impressed with the fact that this person was able to take these components, take these influences and make something that was compelling and was entertaining at the same time. Because the survival horror elements are great, checks all those boxes. And then at the same time, like it creates this world that is like pretty creepy and has this sort of almost Lovecraftian approach to aquatic horror that I definitely appreciated. And, you know, overall, like the environments are great. Sound design is great. So yeah, this one really clicked with me. How did you find Neptune's Children?
Yeah, it does give you this sort of feeling of like a proper PlayStation game lost to time rather than, you know, a homage to one. It just like, even when you linked it to me and I saw the first screenshots, I was like, wow, you know, it just instantly reminds me of like early PlayStation. Absolutely. And then when you play it, it has that, you know, the fussiness and the, you know, very precise and fiddly nature of it that you don't want in games necessarily, but when put into a survival horror mold, which we've been talking about only in recent weeks, you know, really does capture that feeling of why those sort of control systems were so important for those games. It gives it an intensity and an atmosphere, you know, and I think, as you said, with the combination of everything going well with this, the sound and the simple design that stacks these little layers on top to make the experience more intense, it does just create such a wonderful atmosphere of, you know, where you are. You know, when you look at the game from a, you know, if you're looking, you're standing away from it, looking at it, you go, okay, so there are aspects of it, you go, it doesn't, you could argue it doesn't really look like, you know, what it's supposed to be looking like in terms of environment. But in the playing and in getting into that and really getting embroiled in that atmosphere, you do get swept away. You know, that would be, so much of modern sort of horror gaming is about details and, you know, like showing a lot, maybe showing too much, rather than letting your imagination fill in the gaps by creating the right sense of atmosphere, sense of place. And yeah, this has that, you know, where it is like, you know, lo-fi, but makes you fill in the gaps with, you know, storytelling, atmosphere, sound, etc. You know, it took a little getting used to in terms of playing. You know, I think there's no doubt about that. Even for, you know, someone who's played games for a long, long time, it's very swimmy, to pardon the pun, you know, at first. But yeah, once you get into the way it works, yeah, it really does have something going for it in that one. And it's one of those rare times where I think, game jam or not, you know, expanding upon it maybe wouldn't do much for it. You know, I think it's quite good in its current format and bite-sized sort of feel. But I could see it being like made into, you know, taking everything that's here, keeping that the same and just like fleshing out a little bit more in terms of like story and giving it a bit more, you know, exploration in it. Could be, you know, worthwhile as like a proper full game, you know, I think. Because the fundamentals here are just great. I think they will do wonders for a proper game. And it's that's to great credit to say that, you know, you can have so much of a game jam entry work as a full game and really capture the spirit, you know, which is if you were creating a demo or a concept or whatever, you want to give a real taste of what you think the game should taste like, play like even. And this does, you know, like that. I could see it. You know, it's one of those where if it was back in the day on one of those PlayStation discs and it's like it was one of the games on the demo disc, yeah, it would really give you a good sense of what that game could be. And, you know, if you were into it, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I would like to check that game out when it comes out or something. So, yeah, very impressed with this one.
Yeah, this is one of those horror bites that makes me look at the developer's catalog like instantaneously, right? As soon as I finished this, I went right to the developer's page and saw like, oh, this is somebody that experiments a lot with a lot of different varieties, most often because, you know, game jam requirements and whatnot. But I stopped looking, I think, at some horror bites as if I want to see them be expanded on, and more, I'm excited for the next thing that this person makes because of what they learned from this horror bite, right?
Yes.
And so that's been something that's been my mindset, I think, going into more horror bites is just like, okay, this is a developer that I'm going to add them to like this running list that I have and just like check in with them in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, just to see what their next project is. And I think that what I'll probably start doing is like removing some names from that list if I don't see some developers like learning from each of these games in a meaningful way, perhaps. You know, the type of thing where it's like, this is definitely somebody that, and I went through some of their other games and just like browsed them. And I was like, oh, I'm seeing a great amount of variety and like growth, both in terms of scope, in terms of technical abilities, and also just, you know, the types of experiences that they're making. And, you know, I had somewhat of an inkling that you'd dig this because it has some, you know, Terror from the Deep vibes, which I know definitely jive with you in terms of XCOM. So yeah, you know, this was one where it does a great job, I think, of abiding by those game jam parameters, but at the same time, playing and sort of taking all those elements and making something special and something that, you know, I've never played a dungeon crawler that had these aquatic elements to it. So that was definitely a welcome surprise this week.
Absolutely. And while we back up our save files, you can enjoy this short break.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome back to Horror Bites. Strange Signals PR has sent us this next pick, and it's a demo for a metafictional horror game by Ratcliffe Games, a one-person development studio. The game is Among Ashes. It's a first-person survival horror game set in the early 2000s where your friend has sent you a link to a game posted online called Nightcall. Unfortunately, this recommendation is most unwelcome as the game is a cursed thing. In the story of the game, like I said, early 2000s, so you have that nature of it, and you open whilst playing, you know, a self-professed Quake ripoff in the game on a monitor from the 2000s. And that in itself was like a nice surprise, and like, oh, okay, so where's the other part of this game coming in? I was thinking straight away, because like, I thought, okay, is it just going to be like an anthology of things you play in the borders of this screen? But yeah, soon you get a little message icon pop up to speak to your friend in an online chat thing, have a little conversation, and yeah, you know, he does link you to this other game, which is Lovecraft, you know, spoof, I would say, you know, I think it's called Outsmouth instead of Innsmouth sort of thing, like that sort of thing, yeah. And it's basically like you're walking around this building, you know, this mansion-esque building, and you know, finding your way for rooms. It's very dark, I might add. And and yeah, so at that point, it's like, okay, so am I just playing like little games within this little story? That'd be cool. And even then, yeah, that's cool. But the stinger of this game is that no, this game is cursed and it bleeds into reality. And once you're away from the screen, you have this house that is, you know, of a higher visual level than the games you've been playing, which again was a really cool thing to see. And we're left with this hook of like, you know, something terrible will happen if you don't keep playing the game sort of thing. So on a sort of layered thing with this, you know, the fact that you do start by playing a game within a game and then having this really sort of retro experience on the computer, which I don't know about you, just made me feel very nostalgic.
Absolutely.
Like that setup of it, just presentation wise, yeah, perfect in what it does. And then going to that second game, which is like, it feels like something that could have easily come out of that era of PC gaming. You know, like the character models are just that sort of like more detailed than PlayStation 1 sort of thing, but slightly below, you know, Half-Life 2 sort of levels, if you know what I mean. And everything's a bit off and iffy in that way that they can look, you know, quite deliberately, I think, here as well. And yeah, the way it sort of blends these things and doesn't ever really take you away from the screen necessarily in terms of like, you know, when you're playing the game and the screen, you know, you are just still at the monitor and looking with that sort of border. But it's amazing how competent everything within that is made, you know, as well. That these games are actually really well playable. You know, that Quake clone at the beginning is actually quite fun to play for a bit. You know, basic and, you know, I think it's good that they sort of play into the idea that it's a quick clone, you know, knockoff sort of thing. But yeah, from what I played of like the game within a game as well, it's quite a cool throwback sort of survival horror thing. Like I said, maybe a bit too dark. Had to mess with the settings a lot with this one. And the old complaint of, you know, daylight playing of dark video games came back to rear its ugly head, even though this time I did it on a big screen. And I think HDR on consoles and Steam Deck do not help matters with some games, that's for sure. I was actually ironically playing Half-Life 2 again this week for a bit. And there were areas in that because it's all been jazzed up by all the gubbins that have been done to that game with like HDR and that. It just, some places I couldn't see a fucking thing like that. So I don't think it's really a fault of the game. It's just, you know, modern systems and the way those things happen. So once I got into the groove of that, it was a cool thing to play. I don't really want to give too much away, just because the way it's set up, it's really cool to sort of experience how it goes beyond that. And like, you know, this is like a 30-minute slice of the game, which will be coming out in the future. No set release date at present. But yeah, I really dig the concept. And, you know, for a one-person team, in as much as that means, you know, I think it's really impressive work. How about you?
Yeah, this was incredibly impressive. And I think that it is indicative of somebody that is both very technically talented in terms of developing, but also kind of like what you had said at the very beginning, right? This idea that somebody that was in that period of time enjoying PC games and, yeah, you know, part of PC culture at that time period. I mean, one of the things that I really love about this is how well it captures the AIM era, right? The fact that you've got that, you know, what looks like kind of just the family computer desktop, you've got that game open that's like this very obvious Quake clone, but at the same time is incredibly competent for as simplistic as it is, which I think to be able to create a clone of one of the most beloved games, of most influential games of all time, but to not have it feel, I suppose, you know, lesser in the sense that it's not hitting exactly the mark that it needs to with being a clone of that game, right? It looks the part, it plays the part, it has the energy of the part, but obviously you're not comparing it on the same type of basis. But as a clone, it's exactly what it needs to be. But then also the fact that you incorporate this feature that we've seen a couple of times pop up on Horror Bites, which is switching between either, you know, the gameplay and then some type of messaging service that's in the game. Typically it's a cell phone, and then this time it's jumping to the AIM messenger, which you can actually like scroll through a bunch of the different chats with people that the player has had previously that just aren't online. But like little bits like that, that do a lot to just like give you a sense of who this person is, their relationships. But then of course there's the recurring chatting with the friend that gives you the game and whatnot that you play after that. And, you know, to go from that chunky 90s shooter to something that's more, you know, early's almost kind of like PSX era, kind of, that is, you know, not only a completely different genre, but to be just as competent as being a clone of survival horror, you know, whether they're channeling Resident Evil, whether they're, you know, doing that just in first person now, like to have two completely distinct clones of the two of the most influential games of all time, and have them be very competent in what they do. Granted, you know, might be a little too dark at times. I definitely got lost a couple of times trying to, you know, navigate corridors. But, you know, I think that all of that is to be said that, you know, it is incredibly impressive to me that, again, somebody is able to do that and do it as well as they need to up until the point that experiencing those games and the player realizes, oh, this is not the brunt of the experience. And that's enough to be said there. I think that, you know, for the 30-minute slice of this game that we played to introduce two completely different experiences, have them both be successful at what they set out to do, and then introduce this next aspect of the game is incredibly impressive. And when you talk about small slices of an experience, this is probably one of the best I've played in that regard of shows you just enough of what the future of this game could hold, but at the same time doesn't reveal too much about, you know, what that is going to actually entail for the rest of this experience. You know, I think that I went into this with one expectation, but at the end of the experience, I was just like kind of taken aback and really excited to see what the next phase of this game is. Because if the rest of this game is as stellar as the amount of variety and the fine tuning that was there for the, you know, experience that we got.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one that's gone on my list of, you know, most anticipated for things to follow for the rest of the year.
Yeah. And yeah, there were a couple of games that reminded me of that we'd had in the past, which were Geordie Boy's Broken Through, which, you know, did similar things, and Suffer the Night, the demo we played for that game as well, where they had this sort of, you know, game within a game thing and like really playing with the environment. Also reminded me a bit, you know, though it's very different, stuff like Killer Frequency, where you are doing a job whilst having something happening in the real world as well, and like having to dovetail between. Yeah, you know, when we started the Horror Bites, you know, we often remarked about how great, you know, this whole sort of like menial job thing is, you know, like, and what that sort of evolved into, I think we've seen in this space, is developers taking the simulator genre and sort of pushing that further and further to sort of immerse you in one side of horror whilst bringing in another. So like having horror invade the safety of something else like that, with even ironically here playing a horror game like that. And then there was just the weird nature of this in general, the timing of it. You know, I've recently watched like a horror film based on like YouTubers and live streaming and stuff like that, where, you know, it was like about someone sending in like some mystery game that's cursed like that, and it doing all these things that bleed into reality. And then just obviously this week we've covered Alone in the Dark, the remake of that, which, you know, this the survival game Nightcall kind of has elements of that in it. It was a very weird coincidence to have all these things sort of relate to each other and like that, and this turning up, ironically, this turning up in an email, like a link to a game I'd never heard of, you know, from a PR, which was like, yeah, this is just too perfect, you know, to do that. Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing we always ask for, you know, when we call for, you know, like people to bring forward games, demos and whatever, and to the show. And yeah, I was really happy that we got this one on the show this week.
Likewise.
And with that, I would like to thank Ratcliffe Games and Strange Signals for giving us this preview build of Among Ashes. You can play the demo yourself on April 15th when it debuts on the Steam FPS Fest. So you can download it there and then, and we will link to the Steam page in the show notes so you can get that page ready for then. We're wrapping things up though now, and as ever, if you are a developer of an indie horror game, demo, concept or game jam entry, we would love to hear from you. You can drop us a DM at that site, you know, on social media at SaferoomPod or SaferoomPod@gmail.com for email. Jay, another fine journey for the pair of us. We will see you all next week, and we will keep searching for more Horror Bites.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.